I spoke with a market research firm who looked at the trading data, and he said, look, you're seeing these huge spikes in activity just before the data is officially released, which means that there are a whole bunch of people who have a lot of money who are gambling on inside information. And this is going on all over the place.
Matt Taibbi, we're going to have to leave it there. Contributing editor for Rolling Stone magazine. We'll link to your piece in Rolling Stone. It hits the stands Friday. It's called Looting the Pension Funds. 5 years after the financial crisis, Wall Street's picking at the carcass of flat broke city and state governments, blaming public workers and making millions to rescue them. That does it for the show. Democracy Now! Is hiring two jobs, Linux systems administrator and annual giving manager. Check our website. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge with host Joanne Hardesty. Today we'll take a look at the September 2013 special session of the Oregon State Legislature. What exactly does our governor have in mind? Well, State Representative Lou Fredericks will be joining us and give us the inside scoop. Do call in with your questions and concerns.
The KBOO Book and Record Sale is back. KBOO's annual Book and Record Sale happens Saturday, September 28th, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Not only will there be fabulous books, CDs, and vinyl to grab at ridiculously low prices, but it will also be a madcap fun community event. There will be KBOO DJs spinning live all day and baked goods available for a donation. All proceeds from the day benefits KBOO, your community radio station. It all happens at the Musicians Union at 325 Northeast 20th on Saturday, September 28th. That's 9 a.m. till 4 p.m. Questions? Contact Ani at volunteer@kboo.org. For more information, check out kboo.fm.
There are some women I'd like you to meet. Saba, a Palestinian raised in Jordan, put on the headscarf at age 14 against her father's advice. She was an elementary school teacher when she met her husband. And there's Zanira, born in India and raised in London. At age 21, she made the pilgrimage to Mecca with her father. She was so moved by the experience, she prayed to marry a really good man in white robes and a scarf, like she'd seen there. I'm Linda Olson Osterlund, and these are just two of the women I'd like you to meet. Tune in to A Deeper Look this Thursday, September 26th at 9:30 a.m., when my guest is Guardian reporter Victoria Brittain. She'll introduce us to Saba and Zanira, as well as others in her book, Shadow Lives, The Forgotten Women of the War on Terror. That's this Thursday morning at 9:30 a.m., right here on KBOO.
Good morning, good morning. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. Governor John Kitzhaber has called for a special legislative session that will start on Monday, September 30th, 2013. You may ask, what are the issues that the governor plans to address during this special session? He has a short list that he provided to legislative leadership about what he hoped to accomplish. There are a couple of things that appear to be missing, but we'll get to those during the conversation. In the last half hour of the program, State Rep Lou Frederick will be calling in. As you can expect, with the special session starting on Monday, there are legislative hearings today and Friday, all day in Salem, around some very specific legislation. And so what the governor says he will get accomplished during this special session is to work out the PERS tax deal that would include expanding tax credits for low-income Oregonians. The governor says that he will address that Oregon could set tolls for Washington as it relates to the Columbia River crossing. You remember the horribly bad billions of dollars, $2.8 billion project that won't pay for itself. But now we're going to build, Oregonians are going to pay for Oregonians and Washingtonians. If the governor gets his way, there will be a bill on GMO bill that the governor has said that he wants to get through this session. And there's a memo that the governor sent to legislators that kind of laid out what he thinks will happen. And so, again, today there are hearings that started this morning at 8 o'clock in Salem. There will actually be a committee meeting today at 2:15. The Joint Interim Committee on Special Sessions will hold an informational meeting today. And that meeting will discuss PERS and the savings that are expected from whatever PERS legislation is moving forward. Tomorrow at 9 a.m., the Joint Interim Committee on Special Sessions will hold an information meeting related to revenue and corresponding appropriation measures. So this will probably be where the myth around the Columbia River crossing will probably come up. What do you hope comes out of this special session? Do you think we even need a special session? These are some of the questions that I know Oregonians are asking. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can give us a call by calling 503-231-8187. We already have an early morning caller ready to go. Good morning, Joanne. Welcome to KBOO.
Yes, Joanne. This Oregon legislature, I don't use computers, and so I'm still breathing and moving. I want to ask this for my granddaughter. What legislator can I go to about this? My granddaughter's got disabilities. She's in her 20s. She dropped out of middle school. She is biracial, but she doesn't have brown skin. Is there? I want to try to get some relief from the GED courses in the community college. They charge $200 more or less. Is there anybody I could go to that, to get, I'm not expecting the whole thing, but to get some, well, low income, to get some financial relief, and I'll get off the phone and listen to you. Bye.
Bye, Joanne. It's a great question, and I would suggest that you start with your own legislator. I'm not sure what part of town you live in, and you said you don't have a computer. However, if you have access to a library computer and put your zip code in, it will tell you who into a search engine for the Oregon legislature. It will tell you who your House member and who your Senate member is. If you remember who you voted for in the last election, then you could just go to information and ask for their phone number. But I would start with my own legislator. Explain the situation and ask them what they think or how they can connect you to local services. So that is my recommendation. Hopefully that will be helpful for you and others who are listening. So we know that the governor has big plans around PERS reform, but we haven't seen the details. As of last evening, the bills that have been developed had not been publicized as of yet. And so I think it's going to be a challenge for legislators to get the legislation, to hear from enough people, because most people Thursday afternoon at 2:15 or Friday morning at 9 will be at work or at school or someplace other than Salem listening to invited testimony around this particular legislation. One question I will have for Representative Lou Frederick is, if these issues were so important, why did they not get accomplished on the regular legislative session? And of course, I can't wait to talk to him about the Columbia River crossing and why that horribly bad proposal just simply won't die. In fact, there's new information that my favorite economist obtained access to, Joe Cartwright from Portland. He's a Portland economist, and he says that the $2.8 million project, the how the governor continues to say we're going to pay for it is through tolls. But if half the drivers divert to I-205, there's really no built-in mechanism for us to be able to pay for this bridge expansion. And I say that very loosely because it's not really a bridge expansion. Now it seems to be a matter of we're going to do this regardless of whether it makes sense, regardless of how much money it costs, regardless of how much money we've already spent and wasted on consultants to tell us what a great, wonderful project this is. So what we know for sure is that Washington State's legislators were smart enough to vote no to fund this effort. And so we will see whether or not the governor and legislative leadership will try to just like stuff this down our throats as we get through this special legislative session. And so for you, what are the things missing from the governor's agenda? What would you like to see this special legislative session address? I think we've got a lot of infrastructure problems that we haven't even started talking about. We're certainly not talking about fixing our tax system. We continue to talk about taxes in isolation from what are the resources that we need to run the state in a manner that makes sense. So what do you think about that? Give us a call at 503-231-8187. Now, there's an editorial this morning in the Oregonian that talks about the governor on Labor Day came out strongly in opposition to a measure that would create, apparently there's a ballot measure that could create a right to work state in Oregon. I actually thought Oregon was a right to work state, but apparently there's a move on with a ballot measure that is collecting signatures and may end up on the November 2014 ballot that would declare Oregon a right-to-work state. There's been some the House Minority Leader, Mac Lane, says that major business groups have approached him, understanding that the governor would oppose the tax initiative, but businesses went along with the grand bargain, which cut taxes for some businesses but raised them for others. So it will be interesting to see how that plays out and whether or not there is a move in this legislative special session to provide more tax breaks to more businesses. You remember we had a special session before the last legislative session convened to give a tax break to Nike over a 25-year period of time, which I thought was pretty appalling since this governor has promised to look at our tax structure and actually fix it, since right now individuals are paying significantly more in taxes than businesses are, and we need to flip that switch. When I was a legislator, it was more like 50-50, and now it's more like 25-75, and we've got to fix that. It looks like we've got people calling in, and the lights are lighting up. And if you want to join the conversation, feel free to give us a call at 503-231-8187. And we are talking about Oregon's special session of the Oregon legislature that is scheduled to begin on Monday, September 30th. And so, hello, Maria. Welcome to Cable.
Hi, yes. I just wanted to comment on the governor's proposal for education.
Okay. Does he have one?
Yes. He has done such an amazing job lately. My kids are in the Beaverton School District, and I am just so happy to say that he's doing everything he can to be able to make the school days better and the teachers come back. And, I mean, just listening to him talk has been such a great relief for us, and being able to see that he was able to get these people in one room at his mansion and get people working on what needs to get done, I was just really proud to hear that they came to an agreement of some sort.
Well, thank you for that. I'm glad to hear that, at least in Beaverton, the governor's efforts appear to be having a positive impact on the education experience.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your call. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We're talking about Oregon's special legislative session that is scheduled to convene on Monday, but there are a series of legislative hearings starting today at 2:15 and again tomorrow at 9 a.m. in Salem to address the governor's legislative agenda. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call. Hello, Demi. Welcome to KBOO.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hi. I just have a very quick question. I heard you mention the Columbia River crossing.
Uh-huh.
And, I'm not the only one who thought about this, but why not just leave the Interstate Bridge alone since it's already a historic bridge? And why not build a third bridge that would serve, that would be basically taking some of the traffic away from the interstate?
Well, that certainly is something that's come up before. I honestly don't know why the governor is so tied into this particular package, probably because it's been on the drawing board for about 6 or 8 years, and there have been, a decade, and there have been many consultants that have made millions of dollars off of this effort. I think we have to go back to the drawing board and find a bridge we can afford to build, and then one that serves the needs of Oregonians. I'd be appalled to be paying for a bridge to Washington, knowing Washington put no money into it. I think that's pretty appalling to ask Oregonians to do.
Absolutely, and I just think a third bridge would make sense because there's such a great distance between the 205 and the I-5 freeway. It seems like there has to be some place where we could have another bridge that would serve the people who live in that area.
That's absolutely true. And it would be devastating for people who live around 205 to have all that commuter traffic coming through their neighborhoods twice a day just to avoid the toll.
Which people will do because that's just, that's just
human nature, right, right. We will drive 10 miles out of the way if we think we're going to save a buck.
Exactly. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you. I appreciate your call. Have a great day.
Goodbye.
Bye now. 503-231-8187. I love the fact that the program has started off with women power today. Normally, it's the men that call and tell me what I should be thinking or doing. But so, hello for women power. Good morning, Karen. Welcome to KBOO, and thank you for continuing the trend.
Hi. Friday, I call my legislators and give them my opinion about things like food stamps and genetically modified corn.
Wonderful. And so what else?
GMO corn.
Oh, right. Well, that is on the agenda. So maybe you can tell us, what's the governor thinking? Do you know about what's going to come out of this legislative session?
Well, no, I'm not sure about this, but my legislators said that the Senate or the House turned down a proposal, a bill that would have banned counties from banning GMO products.
Right.
Except Jackson County, which makes no sense that one county is different than the other 25.
Right.
So I'm curious, do you have the wording on that bill? Is that the same bill that I was...
No, in fact, as of last night, the bills for the special session had not been released yet. But maybe when Lou Frederick comes on a little bit later, he will have some answers to that question.
Okay.
As a legislator, he might actually have more access to the bills than I do.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your call. Have a great day.
Thank you.
We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Colin. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, thanks.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You are first official male today. Make it count.
All right, thanks. Well, excuse me. I just wanted to talk about, the budget and, how they're going to try to generate about $200 million of revenue.
Right.
But at the same time, they're cutting $4 billion on the PERS. And it looks like it's, they're heaping the lion's share of the responsibility onto, working and intellectual, people in the state of Oregon. And a lot of people don't know this also, but, ballot measures 66 and 67, which the legislature, kind of kicked down the road to all of us, voters to vote on, which passed unanimously, is sunsetted as well, too. So we're going to lose that. And, this $200 million, supposedly tax hike, it's they're going to try to exclude all S corporations. Well, as you probably know, just about anybody who has some money can become an S corporation.
That's right.
What's going to happen is you're going to have these S corporation, thing come up, and then all these rich people are going to be able to just, put their money in S corporations and not pay the tax. So, call your legislature and, legislator and really talk to them about, how this is shaping up. Because I don't think Kitzhaber really has any idea about this, this S corporation part of the deal. And, what's going to happen is, really wealthy people are going to talk to their tax accountants, and their tax accountants just say, like, well, just, form an S corporation,
right.
pay the tax. And then again, also that 66 and 67 is sunsetted as well, too. So we're going to lose that revenue as well. And, corporations are doing great right now, even medium-sized corporations in the state of Oregon. And we should be looking at raising revenues for the state, while the economy is starting to bubble up,
right.
rather than slashing, benefits for, people who are promised, money, for taking, lower wage jobs that they probably could have gotten with the education levels that they have.
Right.
Particularly in education.
Well, you raise a really good point. So it certainly sounds like the governor's proposal is all about reducing the cost of PERS, but
yeah.
really not looking at how do you fix the tax system so that the tax system supports the services that as a state you want to provide.
Exactly. And it's completely inequitable. I mean, the way it's looking like, right now, the way it's being proposed is like, the lion's share of it comes down on, state workers.
Right.
And rich people are going to be able to, slip right out of it with an S-corp, according to it right now. So that's why I'm telling everybody, call your legislature and tell them what's going on and explain mm-hmm. to them in economic terms, what this means and what it means for the next election, too.
Well, you raised some really interesting questions. And as I look at the agenda for this afternoon's meeting,
uh-huh.
it's only invited testimony.
Yeah.
The only people that are invited to speak are the Honorable John Kitzhaber,
yeah.
Paul Cleary, who's the director of the Public Employees Retirement System,
uh-huh.
and Marisa Jones, who's the Deputy Legislative Counsel. And so you have a hearing that's going to last at least 2 hours.
Yeah.
You're going to have a room full of legislators. And it's not going to be open for the general public to weigh in.
Yeah.
And so where will the process be that the public gets to weigh in and determine whether or not these are good legislative proposals?
Well, again, call your legislature, yeah. legislator, and find out, in the House and the Senate, and find out, who you represented. For instance,
right.
for myself, it's Jenny Burdick. And
right.
Jenny is head of, I think she's head of the budget committee, too. So, I mean, she's somebody who's
going to be right intimately involved.
Yeah, and I know she. I mean, I've talked to her office, and I know they're on it. I mean, but the problem is we have a public perception that a lot of these things, like for instance, ballot measure 66 and 67, which raised taxes on corporations, they think a lot of people don't know that that's going to end.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
And especially at a point where our economy is starting to bounce back. As I said, businesses are doing pretty well, and it's like, now's the time to start, sort of socking away money and working on rebuilding our infrastructure, and particularly our educational system, and paying for, vital services like police and fire and, all the things that people kind of take for granted, I think, a lot of times when the economy is doing well.
Well, I think you give people good information. They should get in touch with their local legislator and let them know their opinion on these five legislative concepts that
yeah.
the governor has presented. And
yeah.
remember, the governor doesn't have a vote in the legislature. The governor needs yeah. to get 16 votes in the Senate. He needs to get 31 votes in the House.
Yeah.
And he needs to be able to convince a majority of legislators on both sides of the aisle that his proposal is sound.
Yeah.
And so, and I think he's got his work cut out for him, because it doesn't appear that we've thought about the short-term consequences as well as the long-term consequences of continuing to erode our tax infrastructure.
Absolutely.
So thank you very much for your call.
Thank you very much.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. And so once again, the five legislative concepts that the governor has laid out for this special session is public employee retirement system, cost of living adjustment, and then the system itself, the public employee retirement system. Number three, revenue and small business tax cut. Number four, budget appropriations. Number five, preemption of local laws regulating agriculture. I think one of our earlier callers was talking about that particular legislative concept and wanted to find out if that was the one that failed during the regular legislative session. And hopefully we'll get an answer to that when State Rep. Lou Frederick joins us later in the program. I'm going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Harry. Welcome to KBOO.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, my comment is a few comments. The first one is the legislature itself. We wouldn't have special sessions every time if they met every year instead of every 2 years.
Well, they do meet every year now. They meet for 30 days in the off legislative year, and they meet for about 6 months during the full legislative year.
Obviously, that's not enough.
Well, it may be too much. It depends on your perspective.
Yeah.
It depends on whether or not you think it works when they get together.
Well, it's not, because they have to rush everything, and then us citizens find out later on what they did, and all we can do is fume.
Right.
You know. So I think that's what they need to do, is to probably increase it once a year. My second comment is the Columbia River crossing, and hopefully it'll be brought up, maybe a third bridge.
Yeah, someone mentioned that earlier in this conversation. Yes.
Yes, a third bridge, and the third bridge should be on the other side of Willamette. Would be on Highway 30 instead of when Highway 30 curves off to Scappoose. Instead, it should cross the Columbia and then connect onto I-5. It would relieve a lot of
congestion
quite a bit, because they could just go, it'll be like a bypass. They'll just hit I-5, hit Highway 30, and then they can just avoid downtown Portland. Well, actually, 30 goes down downtown Portland, but it avoid a lot of traffic straight through I-5 through Portland. It take care of a lot of congestion.
Yes. Well, thank you so much. That idea has certainly come up in the past, but for some reason, this governor seems to be stuck on the proposal that he inherited when he came back into office. And hopefully, our legislative body can get him off of that and get some creative thinking back about what some alternatives might be.
Yeah.
I just think that they've just drawn a line in the sand. And now they're just being stubborn. I mean, it won't pencil out no matter how many times they try to pencil it out. It's not going to work. It's already cost way more than it's worth anyway.
I'm also a PERS retiree.
Uh-huh.
And I'm kind of upset that they're trying to blame us or trying to use us to budget to balance their budget.
Right.
When the huge amount of money in PERS right now, thank goodness we have we have great investments that we're actually making money.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking at this and say, well, gee, why should we give it to these retirees when we can take it?
Well, you raise a really good question, because as a PERS retiree, PERS retirees just seem to be getting the brunt of any kind of legislative action as it relates to tax reform, right? And it's all about you greedy PERS recipients living high on the hog.
Yeah, but the other side is what the PERS and what the PERS and what the state employee unions are going to do, the lawsuits that are going to file if they pass any type of legislation, is just the lawsuits they're going to file. Because why should they take that money when actually it was made for us and the money being made instead of being put away is being spent on budget concerns?
Well, I share your concern because, you know, when you talk about tax reform should be a shared burden. And if we're only looking at how we can make public employees pay more as compared to the corporations that benefit from our infrastructure, that's a problem. Okay. So, well, thank you for your call. Hopefully you have called your legislator, your state senator, and expressed your concerns about this special session.
I definitely will.
Thank you so much. Have a great day. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Hello, Gabriel. Welcome to KBOO.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome.
Hey, I was calling in about the CRC. I'm a supporter of the CRC. I'm not sure if I'm a supporter of a toll or not, but I wanted to kind of point out some of the holes and some of the arguments that I'm hearing against the CRC, if I could.
Okay.
So, one, I heard you say that it's in our nature to drive 10 miles out of the way to save a buck.
Right.
I'm not sure if you fight the traffic in the afternoon. I, until recently, just got laid off, but I was working out in Hillsboro. And fighting the traffic back into town every day, I will tell you that I would gladly pay $5 to take 15 minutes off of that stress, because that takes 15 years off of your life every day.
Yes.
The second thing is, while I could see that maybe some of the traffic being diverted to 205, the argument that a lot of traffic is going to go over there, I think, is faulty. And then to say that, well, if a lot of the traffic goes over there, it's going to be disruptive to the neighborhoods around the 205.
Right.
But then the alternative proposal is to build a third bridge. Building a whole new bridge is going to be much more disruptive to a lot of different neighborhoods. I'm a construction worker myself. I know the kind of burden that we can put on people while we're trying to improve neighborhood infrastructure.
Right.
And the third thing I wanted to say is I'm very surprised at the left in this city being so against the CRC. I know that up in Vancouver and Washington, most of the opposition is coming from the extreme right wing. But I think that the left needs to see this for what it is. What it is building up the infrastructure through a jobs works program. Things aren't good out there in the economy still. We need jobs. And building our infrastructure is where we should be putting our money into. And I think that if we look at, like, well, why are they so focused on I-5, right?
Right.
I-5 bridge is a huge bridge on the greatest thoroughfare connecting the three countries in North America on the West Coast. When the fault line gives, if it gives, when it gives, most of the bridges in this town, I can tell you, will crumble. If you look at the ratings that they've received,
right,
none of our bridges are sound. They all need to be repaired or rebuilt. If that I-5 bridge goes and we're not able to get goods and services up and down the West Coast to get people help that they're going to be needing in case of catastrophes and whatnot, then we're going to be up the creek. And a third bridge isn't the solution, I think. Now, maybe the CRC has problems, and I'm not saying it doesn't. I think that we've wasted a ton of money trying to get it off the drawing board, and that money should be demanded back because they obviously did not do a good job. But going back to the drawing board, going back to getting more input, is just going to prolong the inevitable that we need more infrastructure connecting Oregon to Washington. And the I-5 bridge, I think, is the place to put it.
Well, I wanted to give you an opportunity to make your case because I've been a longtime critic of the CRC, and as you notice, many of the callers also are critics of the CRC. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to make your case.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, no worry. But I also want to say, so let's take a couple of the things that you said, which is I agree with you that I think the governor sees this from a very narrow perspective, which is a jobs program. A jobs program for a very limited number of construction workers for a very limited period of time. I believe that that's like been the core reason why the governor has been really strong in his support. But we are acting as if life hasn't changed and the economy isn't changing, right? We aren't looking at this opportunity to say, how do we really create sustainable employment opportunities in an era where construction jobs are limited, where building is limited, creativity is pretty limited, because we just keep wanting to do what we've always done, right? And so I think for the governor, construction jobs, yeah, it sounds good. It pleases the unions that have people that are at work today. It does nothing to grow the workforce for tomorrow. It does nothing to prepare the community for what's next. What I don't see in this...
I don't see how you can say that it does nothing to grow the workforce.
Well, it's not. It's using the same people. They're not... is there a on-the-job employment program that's going to take people from journeyman to...
Every single jobs project in this state has a forced apprenticeship, especially if it goes union, a forced apprenticeship. And then if you look at, like...
I've seen how
women
they...
Women in the trades, where it, women in the trades and some other programs that are through the unions that are getting women, people from low economic statuses, into these jobs where they have health care, where they have pensions, where they have good-paying jobs,
you know,
instead of working at McDonald's
or
working at Target.
I have seen what those programs say they do, and I've seen the outcome of some of those programs. Now, the Oregon Tradeswomen is a wonderful program, but they had to create their own program to get women into the trade jobs, right?
And they're doing a good job at it, aren't they?
They're doing a really good job. But I have to say, if you look at who's out working, I don't see low-income people doing on-the-job training on those projects. When I see those projects taking place now, I don't see people of color working those projects. I see middle-class white guys who, you know, are hoping that, you know, just 5 more years, 10 more years, I can retire and I'm done. But I don't see the building what's coming.
I will say that everybody on the job site, besides the bosses, are working class, not middle class. But back to the issue at hand, the CRC, when you say a limited amount of jobs, you make it sound like maybe it's going to be like, you know, for instance, the Nestle plant selling off water rights for 25 jobs. No, this is going to create thousands of jobs.
Or Google.
Long-term.
Or Google, right? Buying up Primeville so that they can have 10 employees.
Right. But to make it sound as if this is in the same basket, I think that's a false argument.
You know what?
This is going to create thousands of
jobs.
And
I could spend the rest of this program talking about the CRC, but that is not my program today.
Hey, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
You are so welcome. But please, we're going to be having this conversation again, and this isn't the end of the conversation, because clearly this project will not die. Have a good day.
It will live on. Thank you.
Bye now. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Hello, Lee. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning, Lee. How are you?
Very good. A little chilly out here, but...
It is.
I'm not ready for winter and the rains yet.
Me either. I'm demanding summer still.
Well, you know, I got so much stuff in my garden, I don't know what to do. I'm generally of the opinion that this legislative session is not about representing the people.
Mm.
And that's really bothersome to me. But I want to specifically talk about PERS, because every time I hear that term, something gets stuck in my craw and my blood pressure goes up. And the fundamental argument that I have is that the benefits paid through PERS to state employees comes from the taxpayers.
Right.
And that once those monies are accumulated, they are invested, and they're invested in typically stocks and bonds through Wall Street. And you know, Wall Street is... Basically, national and international businesses doing business in other states that are basically competing against Oregon companies and Oregon employees. And what I'm wondering is why we, as Oregon taxpayers, are not investing in something like a state bank that distributes and loans money to Oregonians for Oregonians.
You raised some really interesting points, and I certainly can't argue with the points that you raise. And State Rep. Lou Frederick has just joined me in the studio. Good morning, Lou.
Good morning. How are you, Joanne?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Sure.
I know that you're running to legislative hearings and all sorts of things
all
are happening
things.
Today. I have a caller that actually was just talking about we seem to have the wrong priorities as in the legislature, you know, rather than working on a state bank and working on issues that really impact people and building a community. We seem to be stuck in this pattern of, you know, let's cut PERS and let's beat up on public employees and let's call it a day.
Okay. where do we start with that one, Joanne?
So welcome to the program.
Well, not just that. I was going to say, gee, that's changed so much since you were there, right?
Right. Well, it's interesting. I think back on my days, and I think it was actually easier to get things done when Republicans controlled everything and you knew you were in a minority party. So, it was
I won't say easier, but...
Well, different.
Different.
Let's say different.
Different.
All right.
And what got done was a different thing altogether. No, I think that there's a balance there. We did get a lot done during the 2013 session. I was very pleased with some of the things we got. I have to be very pleased. I had 33 bills that I introduced. I got 13 passed. And I had about 10 more that either were part of other bills or were, in fact, at least we had the discussion, which is what we would not have had the 2 years before. So, that I felt very good about that. And we passed a number of other things, you know, the tuition equity, the cultural competence, health care, driver's cards. I mean, a number of things were done, in fact. Now, there's an aspect to this that's important that was different than when you were there. Mm. In many cases, the media does not cover the legislature now. So that's a reality. You no longer have a regular television station. The television stations don't have a regular reporter who's in Salem. And when you were there, they did. They had basically a bureau there. When I was a television reporter, we had a bureau there.
Right, right.
They still have a room, but they don't show up.
Wow.
For the most part, they only show up if it's on the front page of the Oregonian for the most part. I mean, and the Oregonian, of course, has been cut back a great deal, so you don't have that kind of coverage. So you don't have the media, you don't have the presentation of what's going on in a general media. So we had a lot that took place. We had a lot of stuff that I'm really very proud of. You didn't hear about it. It's not because no one did it. It's also it's because no one covered it. No one said this is what's going on. So that's one part. We are in the middle of this whole thing regarding the grand bargain.
Mm.
And so let me get to that really briefly.
Okay.
I don't think that the folks who need, we don't have, the folks who are being beaten up are in fact the PERS folks.
Mm-hmm.
Public employees have been beaten up for quite some time. A lot of it is, folks would like to throw around a lot of statistics or in terms of numbers. For me, it's not just statistics and numbers, it's my neighbors. I have enough people on my street, in my block, who are either retired or presently working for the Portland schools as teachers, as kitchen staff, or, you know, they did all these kinds of things. And the idea that you're going to ask them to sacrifice more is just outrageous as far as I'm concerned. Because these folks have done that. I mean, a couple of the folks on my street actually had were told that they had to pay back PERS because they had been given too much, so they had to pay back PERS. They also were told that they needed to take furlough days on a regular basis. They needed to the idea. Some of these folks are teachers who spend $3,000 a year just on supplies for their classrooms because the district had to cut back on supplies, pencils, mm-hmm. paper, that kind of thing. In fact, one of them makes sure that she has supplies for her kids because she makes sure that they have toothpaste and toothbrushes and combs and soap and washcloths because her kids are coming to school without being able to have that kind of approach. So she's doing that kind of thing on a regular basis. So the idea that you would ask them or tell them that they need to sacrifice a little bit more for the kids is just, it's crazy. And of course, never mind the number of kids they now have per class and the support services that have been cut back for such a long time. And that's just the teachers. I have other folks who are county employees and city employees and have done state employees who have been working very hard and seen their workloads increase without the support and not had other things. So this sacrifice nonsense, it's nonsense as far as I'm concerned. So that's how I view that. And the other folks don't have any skin in the game. Even with the revenue package that's being presented, there's not a lot of skin in the game there. Who is going to benefit from this and who is going to lose on this?
Right.
That calculation tells me that the folks who lose are the PERS employees.
And so, I mean, supposedly there's a cost of living adjustment is one of the proposals, and then there's a look at the entire system, and then there's a look at a small business tax cut.
Right.
I had an earlier caller that said, well, if you have a lot of money, all you do is just create an S-Corp, and all of a sudden you now don't have to pay that tax.
This is exactly the kind of thing that I'm talking about. Well, let me go back because you went down the list very well. If you're talking about the accumulation of the cuts in terms of the COLAs, in terms of the cost of living adjustments, means that you end up with losing $300 or $400 per year for somebody who's getting a $20,000 PERS benefit.
Mm-hmm.
That's how much. But as it keeps cutting, you end up losing more and more as you go along the years because you're no longer keeping up with either inflation or even close to inflation because it's demanding a cut. Now, I should tell you that I know that there are a lot of adjustments that are going on right now, probably as we speak, with people saying, well, what if we adjust this to this and let's put this level here? And they're trying to do something about that. But what remains is a real simple thing. The folks who have no skin in the game, $300 is something that they might spend on a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
When the folks who are at the $20,000 and $30,000 level for PERS are just barely scraping by on some things. And yes, back in 2003, were you there in 2003?
When
did you leave? Oh, back in 2003, they made the decision to adjust for these huge PERS folks.
Right.
That was done. That's no longer, I mean, the Oregonian keeps bringing that up. They keep bringing it up, and as though that's what happens. Well, that's not the average PERS person at all.
And I think that's the disconnect from the public, right?
Oh, absolutely.
They think a Fonmeier who has
Bellotti.
Who has a six-figure PERS retirement is the norm.
Right.
Just like they think you make a six-figure salary being a legislator. I knew you'd get a kick out of that, right? And you know I know better, but
you know better.
You know, it's like, but the world thinks, right?
Right. That, yeah. Well, they do, and I understand why they do that. But that's also an intentional aspect. Let's be real clear about this. Part of this agenda is not just to deal with PERS in Oregon.
Right.
This is part of the same agenda that you see in Ohio, in Michigan, in Wisconsin.
So part of ALEC? How does ALEC's agenda get into Oregon's legislative
body? Well, because, I mean, it's not just an ALEC agenda. It is an agenda that goes back even further than that. I mean, the fact is, this agenda to attack public employees is something I heard about when I was a reporter. And I heard about it when I went as a reporter covering the Dorchester Conference back in the late 80s. They made it very clear that this was the agenda that they were going to, the strategy that they were going to use. And they said, this is how we're going to do it. And they have accomplished that. They have followed that strategy pretty much to the T to figure out how to discredit, disrupt public employees of one form or another, and this is something that has continued. It is a clear strategy. It's part of the whole privatization approach. It's part of the whole effort to try to serfdom. I mean, it's a feudalism kind of approach. So this is not a surprise.
Right.
It is something that we see across the country. When we see it here in Oregon, it comes in these particular approaches to say, well, we're just adjusting for the kids. Well, you put that as a, oh, how could you be against the kids,
right,
kind of thing. And they use a number of other approaches. This is not a strategy that is designed to help everyone. It's designed to help only a small number of folks.
And so it seems to be like Congress.
We're not as bad as they are. But they have a couple of things that we've seen. I mean, the other aspect that you haven't mentioned, and I've got to mention it, because I'm one of the few people, I may be the only person in the legislature who has actually manipulated genes and genetically engineered organisms. So
you have some expertise in this.
I did that early on, and I did that a while ago, but I was able to do that. Mm-hmm. So I know how that works. Adding this particular proposal
right,
is just outrageous.
And so what is the governor's proposal around
GMO? It's not the governor's proposal. Let's be real clear.
Okay.
The governor's
agenda.
The governor has said that he put that within the bargain, which is a bargaining chip, I guess, or I guess it's not even a chip. It's one of those things where he says, I will put this in there as long as you get other things going on. That's how I understand it. I don't think it's not the governor's proposal, but it's a proposal that was rejected during the regular session. Mm-hmm. And the idea is to allow Jackson County growers and farmers to pass a law to outlaw a GMO or to regulate genetically modified organisms in that county, but not allow anybody else in the rest of the state to do it until we have a work group that is supposed to look at this and see how they're going to work it out. Well. Mm. Interestingly enough, if you look at that, the argument is, well, you can't have just one patchwork of county regulations. You need to have a general regulation, so we can't allow this to happen. It's exactly the same argument that's being used in Washington, D.C. for the Monsanto bill in Washington,
right,
D.C. It's
right,
the same thing. Well, you can't have a state-by-state thing. You need to have a full
federal.
But
right,
we know we're not going to get a federal, so we're going to hold up on this whole thing. That's the idea.
Even after the economic impact of fining GMO wheat?
Well, one would think that people would think about that
right,
that way, but that's not the way. There are folks who believe that was just an anomaly. Well, an anomaly that wasn't supposed to even be around.
Right, right.
But we also have genetically modified sugar beets throughout the state. I mean, that is, in fact, we found out that they had decided that was what was going to happen with the sugar beet industry throughout the state. It's
wow,
all genetically modified. And where it came up was when they started planting some genetically modified organisms in Jackson County within pollen distance of organic plants that they were selling. So we have an organic industry that is really important. We have a seed industry that is really important. The Japanese have made it clear they don't want to have genetically modified organisms in their seed folks or when they're buying other things. So, and genetically engineered. If someone comes back to you and says, well, we've been genetically modifying things for centuries,
right,
they are right. We have
right,
been breeding and everything else. This is taking an organism or a gene from another entity, another plant or another animal or something else, and placing it inside another species that it would normally not have any connection with.
And creating a brand new species.
Well, creating certainly a new
hybrid.
The hybrid thing is something that we've been doing with corn and wheat and rice for centuries.
Right.
This is not just a hybrid. This is actually two separate organisms that are being put together. They're not necessarily related. So you put something like I put a phosphorescent a gene from a bacteria from a plankton from a pond back not bacteria but plankton took phosphorescent gene, placed it in yeast, placed it in a couple of other animals, a couple of other organisms, and used it as a tag. I mean, that mm-hmm. that's how we did that. The gene was already available, so I didn't have to take it out. It was there. We just took it and put it in. So, that's the kind of thing.
We have a couple of callers on the line, and I'm going to see if they've got a quick question we can get in before we're out of time. Hello, Jermaine.
Hey, Jermaine.
How are you? Thank you for your patience. Are you there? Hello, hello. I guess not. Hello, Edith. Welcome to Cable.
Hi.
Hi.
I was wanting to have a way to find out whether the big input to have the big I-5 bridge is part of the interstate highway system's initial development to quickly transport military troops and equipment. If we're expecting to have martial law in Portland, and we're having the Three Amigos meeting where the North American three countries would give up their democratic rights for local control and awareness of what's going on, then nothing we do is going to have a big effect unless we address that. And if we make sure that corporations are not persons, they can't then go around and get around every one of these little laws that we try to have in place.
And
to
so your question, your question, I'm sorry, we're running out of time. What is your question?
Can you prove for us that that's not what's going on and what we can do about it instead, and emphasize that when we have these emergencies, we're going to need local self-help, not external support, because we've had highways and bridges and everything in place for New York City. And
okay, ma'am, I got it. Thank you. We're going to run out of time, so let's get the representative to try to answer your question.
Well, there
Thank
are several
you.
Questions in there. Let me, first of all, the interstate highway system, part of the interstate highway system was, in fact, developed to deal with military transport. That was mm-hmm. that was something that was way back in the 50s. That's the Eisenhower approach. Mm-hmm. That's why we, but it's also why we managed to change what was being done in Portland regarding 205 and the old, what some folks remember as the Mount Hood Freeway. Mm-hmm. That was part of the discussion there as well, which really didn't go to Mount Hood. It just sort of went in that, sort of pointed
direction.
That direction
right.
along Powell Boulevard there. So you have that. Regarding the other things, it's one of those things where you it's taking the step, one step over and continuing. I'm not quite sure that I can frankly
well, one of the things that she said I absolutely agree with is that when an emergency happens, it is going to be our neighbors that we're going to need to depend on.
Absolutely.
And so neighborhood readiness for any kind of emergency is key.
Absolutely.
And we seem to be doing a really poor job of actually engaging communities around how they take care of themselves during a national emergency.
Well, you're right on that, except that there has been a significant effort to try to do something on that over the years, especially following Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
You had this. The city has it. I've forgotten the name of the group, but they have a group of neighborhood teams that went out to talk about neighborhood emergency procedures and to try to get people to stock up on certain things, to know who in your neighborhood had medical facilities, who was available, because that's absolutely correct. We know that if there's a disaster of whatever form, fire, earthquake, or whatever, we are going to have to be relying on our neighbors, because the bridges are going to struggle. Other much larger things are going to be taking place. So it's going to be up to us to try to help each other and ourselves.
That's absolutely true. So in the last minute and a half we have, what do you hope comes out of this special session? What is the best case scenario for this session?
Well, my best case scenario for this session is that the grand bargain doesn't work.
Hmm.
I mean, I am not at all convinced that this is the way that will help the state. Certainly not help my neighborhood, not help the folks in my community. We need to be addressing this on a much larger level. We need to have other folks' skin in the game. It cannot be just public employees. It has to be everyone involved, and it has to be a real substantial revenue increase. It can't be something that's sort of nibbling around the edges. We need to decide in this state whether we want to have a good program in this state or not. And if we're going to have it, we're going to have to pay for it. We're going to have to be really say we're going to pay for it. We have not decided to do that yet. It's a struggle. The governor, I know, is talking about that in another and other conversations. But I think that this particular approach, I don't buy. We tried to do something during the legislative session. People rejected it. I think it's time to come back and start talking about it in a different way.
And hopefully in a much broader public setting where the public can weigh in on the benefits and opportunities that these proposals present. I thank you very much for making time to be here today. We've been talking with Lou Frederick, state representative. I am Joanne Hardesty. You've been listening to Voices from the Edge. See you next week. Same time, same place, same station. Have a great day. Bye.
Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that Peter is gold.
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, the Mighty Boo on your Thursday morning with just a minute before 9 o'clock. Coming up in a half hour on A Deeper Look, host Linda Olson Osterlin interviews Victoria Brittain about her book Shadow Lives, The Forgotten Women of the War on Terror. At 10, hear Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, internationally celebrated writer and political analyst Michael Parenti on his new memoir, Waiting for Yesterday. And Aurora Levin Morales talks about her new book, Kindling, Writings on the Body. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Jim Schumach interviews Katie Schultz about her new book, Flashes of War, which captures personal moments of fear, introspection, confusion, and valor in one collection spanning nations and perspectives. And at 11:30 today on The Film Show, today they present a freewheeling conversation with former Portlander Penny Allen, who helped kickstart Portland's independent film scene in the 1970s. In addition to Oregon film history, we'll be discussing her newest feature, Late for My Mother's Funeral, which screens at the Northwest Film Center on December 16th. But first, it is Press Watch with news you're not supposed to know. Teresa Mitchell is coming up next on KBOO.
Listen to The Film Show, the fourth Thursday of each month at 11:30 a.m. The Film Show features news and interviews about the local and independent film scene. That's The Film Show, the fourth Thursday of the month at 11:30 a.m., only on KBOO Portland.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit